Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the many spirits at the Brown Grand Theater. The Brown Grand Theater is a beautifully restored historic theater in Concordia, Kansas. In 1907, Colonel Napoleon Bonaparte Brown commissioned the building and entrusted its completion to his son, Earl. However, by 1910, Colonel Brown was dead and his son died about 6 months later. These days, when you go to a show at the Brown Grand, you might see more than you were planning on. There have been numerous sightings of a man who is believed to be Earl overseeing the operations of the theater. People have reported smelling perfume that's believed to be his wife, Gertrude's. A little girl in a blue dress has been seen in the theater, and there is a spirit of a man downstairs in the boiler room. Full disclosure, I've had an interest in the Brown Grand for years, ever since I saw it when I moved there to go to college. And at one time, one of my dear friend's parents owned it. So in this episode of The Grave Talks, I'm excited to talk about the Brown Grand Theater with Melissa Swenson, director of the theater, and Tanya Merrill, paranormal investigator. I am really excited today to talk about the Brown Grand in Concordia, Kansas, because, full disclosure, that's where I went to community college. And it is a magnificent theater. And Melissa, now you're the director there at the Brown Grand. Can you tell us a little background? Like, when was it built? And can you tell us a little bit about Napoleon Bonaparte Brown? Because I find that name fascinating.
Of course, yeah. So I've been director here since April of 2021, and the Brown Grand itself was built. Construction started in 1906, and the grand opening was September 7th, 1907. So we just passed this September our 116th birthday, which is incredible. And this building, Colonel Napoleon Bonaparte Brown, quite the name for quite the fellow. He was the one who funded the building of the Brown Grand, and it was built for only $40,000 in 1907. So it's just remarkable that that gift alone has given us such a magnificent facility for over 116 years that we're still using in our community today. So Colonel Brown himself, he moved to Concordia the mid-1870s, and first thing he did was open a bank, and then he built his 23-room mansion, which is still standing also in Concordia. It had the first indoor plumbing in town, and the rumor was he was the only one allowed to use it.
Oh.
So not even his wife.
Like, he made his wife not use the...
Not even
what?
His wife, Catherine. Catherine was actually the colonel's second wife. She was only 19 years old when they married, and there was a 17-year age gap there between the colonel and his second wife, Catherine. They met at a little diner in Missouri, and before she moved to Concordia, he had her sent to finishing school to learn how to become an upper-class, high-society type member. The two of them together had one son, Earl, and Earl, you'll be hearing more about
yes.
as we get into the paranormal discussions later, but Earl ends up being a very well-educated young man and gets his law degree out at Harvard University and meets the love of his life there, Gertrude. Gertrude had two loves in life. She was a very aspiring and accomplished pianist, and her piano is actually still here in Concordia, too. It's over at the Nazareth Convent, the mother house here in town. She also loved architecture, but because she was a woman, she couldn't pursue that as a career in the early 1900s, and she wasn't able to do that. But she ends up helping the architects, who were the Bowler brothers, draw some of the plans and renderings for the Brown Grand, but she couldn't take any credit for her work. Which is why Earl at the time took the credit that she should have deserved. But as her husband, he took the credit for her work, which is why he is our infamous theater ghost. Friendly, of course, but he wants everyone to know her contributions to the theater And he also wants to be sure that the theater is still being used as it was intended to be used. So, yes, that's a little bit about the Brown family and Colonel Napoleon Bonaparte Brown. He actually dubbed himself Colonel. He
Which I think is so
actually, re
interesting. I
yes,
think I'll
if
be
you
called
research
Colonel.
him, yes, if you research him, he was in the Civil War and he was only ever listed as a major. But because he was a wealthy man when he got out of the service, he purchased his next title as Colonel when he was done with the service. So he was quite an interesting fellow, that Colonel Brown. And he had a number of siblings. His parents named all of the brothers and sisters after important historical figures. So he has a brother named George Washington for Brown, for example. So just kind of interesting, the name choice there.
That is really interesting, especially like Napoleon Bonaparte Brown. So, did he just think Concordia needed a little bit of sophistication in class and a theater would help bring that to the city?
Well, another interesting fact was that the Brown Grand was actually the second opera house in Concordia. It was not the first. LaRocque Hall, which would be down on the corner of 6th and Broadway today, was the first opera house. And the community was growing and they were outgrowing that second floor space of LaRocque Hall downtown. Colonel Brown wanted to have a more sophisticated gathering space that was a little bit more official and elegant. And Earl himself, though he was a very prominent lawyer in our community, he also loved theater. He loved the performing arts. And so he wanted to have a more grander place to have the traveling theater troops that were traveling on the railroad from New York City. He wanted to have a space where they could come perform. And opera houses at that time were used not only for performing arts, but it was for boxing matches and political rallies and church services. So it was really the largest gathering space in Concordia once the Brown Grand was built. And at the time the theater was opened, the seating capacity was 1,000 people. So larger than any church and the largest place to really gather the community at large. And I think it was a statement and it was a legacy that Colonel Brown wanted to leave before he passed. And actually, he didn't get to see much of the success of the theater because he ended up passing away in 1910. And then Earl, sadly, about 6 months later, ended up passing away as well due to complications of gallbladder surgery in Kansas City. So both of the men started this beautiful, magnificent legacy for the town, and neither one of them got to really see the long life that it had for their life. But also, I mean, I can imagine, like, if they were to walk through the door today, 116 years later, what they would say about the building, you know?
Right. And what's interesting to me, several things, but one of the interesting things, so many cities across the country have that historical, beautiful theater, and some of those have fallen into complete disrepair. Some of them are kind of halfway fixed up. The Brown Grand is amazing. Did it ever fall into disrepair like so many did?
No,
That's what I
not
thought.
complete disrepair. So after the Browns had it, well, when the Brown men died, the theater went into the hands of the wives and into the Brown estate. And they decided they didn't want anything to do with the theater, and they gave the theater to the city of Concordia. Well, there was nobody who really knew how to make money with the theater the way that Earl did. And then all the theater troops that were traveling from New York City, those were all dying away because the entertainment industry was starting to change into talkies and silent films and eventually movies. Well, and then at that time, the city ended up giving the Brown Grand back to the wives and back to the Brown estate. But Catherine, Colonel's wife, she didn't want anything to do with the theater. But Gertrude, she ended up remarrying. Catherine never remarried, but Gertrude did. And she remarried Ray Green, who was the owner, editor, and publisher of the Blade Empire, which is still our newspaper in Concordia today. But they owned it when it first became a movie theater, and then it remained a movie theater from the mid-20s to about the 70s. So 50-year history of being a movie theater. And then in the 70s, the community rallied together and said, "Hey, we have this beautiful performing arts space. Let's take it back to what it was originally intended to be used as." And so the 50 years as a movie theater came to an end. We were added to the National Register of Historic Places in 1973. And then we undertook the grand restoration in the 70s. And that's when really the theater was transformed back from a movie theater back into an opera house. It was repainted, it was restored. It had its grand reopening September 17th, 1980. So we've kind of been in this state that we're in since 1980. We've done a number of renovation projects, and kept the old gal up and up on the up and up, and we're just really proud of it. We're really proud to have this facility for the community, and we are still used much as an opera house was intended to be used as. We don't only do theater. We try to expose our community to as many different types of the arts as we can. So when we plan our season, for example, we always want to make sure that we have film represented, dance, music, theater, as many different art forms as we can. And then, of course, we're available to rent. So people come in and bring their own productions here and have their shows. We have community theater, there's church services, there's weddings and funerals and all kinds of events, quilt shows. And, we try to still remain true to our roots as an opera house. And still, as the largest gathering place in Concordia, we can seat up to 534 people in the theater today. So we're still in North Central Kansas, one of the largest gathering places that people can come and have events.
So when I was going to college there, and this is in part why I wanted to do this episode, I met this girl, Lori Roney at the time. Her and I took lots of classes together. We ended up moving here to Wichita and going to Wichita State, living together for years. But what's fun is that her parents actually owned the Brown Grand at one time.
That's right. That's right. They were the last family to own it during the movie theater years. And then when the big community rally came together in the 70s, they approached the Roney family about going back to an opera house, and they were completely and totally supportive of that idea. And that's really where everything kind of kicked off, was working with the Roney family to get it back to be an opera house.
When they're such good people, Jack and Annalisa.
Yes.
But I remember way back then talking to Lori. I don't remember the specific conversation, but I'm just like, is that place haunted? You've been in it. Is it haunted? And she's like, I've heard some stories. So then when I was able to get with you guys and set up this recording, I messaged her and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to do an episode on the Brown Grand. Did you ever have any experiences? And she's like, no, she didn't really have any. But her sister said, make sure you have them talk about Earl. So Earl is pretty much well known in that community to haunt the Brown Grand.
Yes, he's kind of the main head ghost around here.
Well, and Tanya is with us today too. And I wanted to start with the history, obviously, with Melissa. But now, Tanya, let's talk about you because you have been doing paranormal investigations for like 22 years. You've investigated all over the country. But you're originally from Concordia and then you came back?
Yes. So grew up in Concordia, just a little bit east of Concordia over by Aurora. I'm out in the farm country. I always say I'm nothing more than a grown-up Kansas farm girl. So it gives you an idea of some of the things that are close and near to and dear to my heart. But Concordia is my hometown. Went away after I graduated from high school, went back east and went to school in a couple of different locations and kind of worked my way across and kind of ended up trickling back to Concordia, back to my hometown as an adult, and set up roots here, set up shop here, and have stayed ever since.
How did you become interested in doing paranormal investigations? Was there an experience that you had when you were young, or was it just, I don't know what this is, and I'm intrigued by the unknown?
Well, I think probably like a lot of ghost hunters, I grew up in one of those very famous haunted houses.
So
when I was a little girl, a small girl, grew up in a haunted house. And of course, that gets you started in asking lots of questions about the paranormal. You know, what is this? Why does this happen? But I don't honestly know if I would have continued down this path if, as a teenager, I had not participated in a number of high school productions that were staged at the Brown Grand. And so that's kind of where I got this idea, you know, maybe I could be a ghost hunter. I really want to know more now. Now I want to go look for these things. I want to know why this happens. I want to know how and, you know, who these people were, what their stories are, because of an incident that happened to me during a high school production at the Brown Grand.
Oh.
Yes.
So
yes,
was it kind of like growing up, because I grew up in a haunted house, too. So growing up in a haunted house is one thing because it's kind of contained to that house. And maybe having an experience at the Brown Grand made you realize, oh, wait a minute. This isn't just my house. There are all kinds of places I could investigate.
Yes, exactly. And better still, it is my very own personal firsthand account of seeing Earl. So one of those great stories. And before that, you know, I had always suspected that the house we lived in was haunted. There were all kinds of, you know, weird noises and weird things would happen. And you always kind of got that sense that you were never alone. You always felt like people were, you know, staring at you, even though you couldn't see them. But what happened at the Brown Grand was a very distinct and specific kind of moment. It was an experience for which I've rarely had since, but it was definitely a moment for which I started to look at the world and go, you know, I bet this happens in a lot of different places, which means I could have a really good reason to be able to tour all of these cool places and experience these scary stories for myself. This could be something interesting that I might want to do for a while.
And you did. Like, you're still doing it.
Exactly.
So tell us about how you saw Earl.
Well, like a lot of other people in Concordia, particularly theater folk are their own for superstitions. As you know, if you've had any sort of workings with folks who regularly work in theaters, you know, it has to do with a lot of tradition, a lot of superstition. But I had always heard about the Brown Grand being haunted as a kid. I had heard about it all throughout. I had heard a story from, you know, a community theater director that she had seen this man in the upstairs balcony turn and walk through the wall upstairs, the production room, or what, the projection room, I guess I should say. When it used to be a movie theater, that's where the projector was setting up to show. And so I had heard that story already. Didn't necessarily connect the points in my mind until one night we were working a closed set. We were building set pieces on the stage. There were a number of high school students working there. And we had a tech person sort of helping to do some of the sound work, but we were just kind of working by ourselves, doing what we thought we were supposed to be doing in a closed set, when another girl sort of in the group looked up into the balcony and she said, you know, isn't the theater supposed to be locked? Is that guy supposed to be standing up there? I mean, how did he get in? And so when I turned and looked up into the second balcony, there was in fact a tall, thin man standing in the shadows, kind of leaned up against the wall, very casually watching proceedings taking place downstairs on the stage, watching us build the set pieces. And so, you know, we called out to him. We said, you know, hey, what are you doing here? Why are you here? How did you get in? At which point in time, he just very sort of casually turned and walked up the stairs there on that second landing and walked to the emergency door and opened it and went out. And I thought, okay, I have to know what's going on. I'm going to go out there, because I thought those doors, you know, what, obviously you could access them from the inside, but not necessarily from the outside. I need to go up and check this. I need to find out what's going on.
That was very brave of you.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's bravery or if it's a crazy stupidity when you go, I'm totally full of myself. I know what's going on. I'm going to make sure that everybody else knows what's going on too, because this is my job as a teenager, you know? So I don't know if it was as much bravery as stupidity, maybe a combination of both. So I went shooting out through the theater very quickly and went upstairs to the balcony there and went to that particular door. And I opened the door and discovered that at that point in time, the fire ladder was actually being worked on. So there wasn't a fire ladder directly below that door on that side. There was on the other side, but not on that side at that moment. So the gentleman in question was not still on the platform and did not have a way to get down.
Wow, that gave me goosebumps.
Yes, he just had vanished. I guess to use the very cliche term, he had just vanished.
And that is really unusual, too, for more than one person to see the same apparition. That's very powerful.
Well, and we just, you know, we had heard that a lot of Earl, that it had a lot to do with students seeing him during work on productions. The story in question is actually from theater director Susan Sutton, who noticed
looking up into
the stands, looking up into that balcony, and saw someone standing there who then said to her, "Are you seeing what I'm seeing?" So we found that that's pretty common. And then, of course, none of us had seen the photographs until after that point. Go out into the front lobby where the family waiting room, the ladies' parlor where all of the family pictures are. And here's this picture of Earl with his handlebar mustache. And it starts to come together in your head, this idea of, I bet I know who I just saw watching all of this proceedings unfold. And so the landing in question features fairly prominently in my haunted history tour. We still sometimes have interesting activity with it, and that sometimes that door will open and close rather suddenly and rather unpredictably during tours. We get a lot of activity around this door. So it must be a favorite spot to kind of keep court for Earl, to kind of keep his eye on everything going on.
Do you think Earl is the only spirit there?
No.
Oh.
No, I do not believe so.
So what else do you think could be, or who else, or do you even know who might be in the Brown Grand?
We've spent a fair amount of time, or I should say I've spent a fair amount of time working with some other researchers in different places trying to get some more information. Many other groups of ghost hunters report picking up the smell of a woman's perfume upstairs there in the gallery. They hear laughter sometimes in the gallery. We've had pink mist reported upstairs in the gallery, which probably belongs to one of the two wives of the men that built this theater. And so it's likely to be either Catherine or Gertrude sort of popping in and checking on things as they're unfolding. We know them to be sort of a happy presence. You know, they're by no means malicious or frightening. They just sort of pop in unexpectedly.
That kind of makes some sense, especially with Earl's wife. Was Earl's wife Catherine, did you say?
Gertrude.
Because she was so involved in the building of the theater.
Correct.
To me, that would make sense that she would be there. And if your husband's there.
Well, Gertrude's the one who got remarried. And to my knowledge, I know she didn't have any children with Earl when they were married. And to my knowledge, I don't think she had any children in her second marriage either. I think in addition to those spirits that Tanya had mentioned, there's also been note of a little girl who hangs out in the first balcony wearing a blue dress. There's been some activity down in the basement of the man who used to operate the original boiler system that was operated with coal. And there's been activity there where they think the man who worked down there, still his spirit is still there as well. So there's a lot of other noises and EVP things that we've picked up over the years, that there's just been a lot of other activity besides Earl and the women, the Brown women. So
as the director of the theater, Melissa, do you hear quite a few reports when it's not a ghost tour, when it's not a paranormal investigation, it's just a theater, it's a production, or maybe somebody's there for a wedding. Do you hear other stories frequently?
Yeah, I mean, I hear the occasional, like, people feel like there's someone blowing on their neck, or they feel like something behind the curtain reached out and touched their arm, or they hear footsteps upstairs on the catwalk above them, you know, on stage. Or they hear knocking on doors, or like Tanya has mentioned already, doors just kind of magically pop open that nobody's standing there. You don't know how it opened. I mean, there's been a couple times I show up to work in the morning and I know all the doors are closed when I leave the night before. You come back the next morning and you're like, how did that door get open? I know nobody was here last night, and yet this door is wide open. So there's been a couple of those types of things that have gone on.
Well, and especially when you're at work, and me, I don't know if I'm just anal, but I kind of leave my desk the same. Mm-hmm. I know I would shut my office door. Now I work from home, so I don't. But, you know, when you leave your workplace, you normally leave it in the same way. Mm-hmm. And so you would definitely notice, like, okay, that door should not be open,
right?
But it is.
Right.
Do you ever feel like when you're in there, do you get that feeling like somebody else is in there with you?
Not usually. I've kind of just come to think that Earl would absolutely love the things that are going on here. Mm-hmm. And he must be very happy that the theater is being used, that he gets to watch everything going on, and that we're taking really good care of the facility too. So I'd like to think that he's just checking in on things. And he's really happy to still see what's going on here. So
I like to think that too.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's kind of part of it.
Right.
Now, some theaters, I think so many of them in this era are definitely haunted. But not all of them embrace that paranormal side of the theater. When did you start hearing of stories? And Tanya, did you share your story back then with other people? It was kind of known back then that the Brown Grand was haunted. But when
I did not. I shared it with other members of the cast. We talked about it, you know, at the end of the show during the cast party. We talked about those moments because other castmates had some similar issues, you know. As Melissa says, there are just some certain things you come to expect that happen here more frequently. For example, one problem that has happened on a number of different productions, props will get mislaid, but they'll get mislaid in a very specific, very, very kind of strange way. So that was the kind of thing that the cast talked about, but it wasn't something we talked about with other people outside the theater. So we didn't really share our stories. We just kind of tucked them away and went on about our daily lives and didn't really put a lot of thought into them. And then much later, when I started sort of looking at what was going on at the Brown Grand, you know, some of the tours that were happening, some of the information that was coming out, began to think about that moment again.
So Melissa, when did you start doing the paranormal?
Yeah, well, tours? I was going to piggyback on what Tanya said. And I know of stories that go all the way back to when the Brown Grand was being restored in the 70s. There would be nails coming out of places that were nailed in the previous day. There would be windows unlocked that were locked the previous day. There was, you know, little things like that, even during the Grand Restoration in the 70s, of activity that has been noted of taking on here at the Brown Grand. And even talking to previous directors that have been in my position, they all have some kind of Earl story, ghost story, weird this happened story. But really, I think when we started doing paranormal tours, it was the director before me, I think, Jason Grogan. He's the one who I think, and Tanya, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Jason was the one who really started letting groups in to investigate, and he started letting groups come in to like see what activity they could pick up on. Like, I know for myself, I've worked with groups like Apex Paranormal, Haunted Rooms America. So, and they do a number of different things, like whether they come in and record for an episode on their webpage or YouTube channel, or they come in and just have an experience where they bring in their ghost gear and they try to capture whatever they can in live moments. Tanya came on board with us, I think it was in 2021, it was the same year that I started, and she would start doing these haunted tours, haunted moonlight tours, haunt the grand tours, and it was really great because, of course, everyone in Concordia and around in our immediate area knows that the Brown Grand is haunted. They've all heard the whispers, mm-hmm. you know, that the Brown mm-hmm. Grand is haunted. So it really is opening the door for people to come in, for those who are curious enough to experience Tanya's tour. She has a lot of a ghost hunting tech that we call it, like pendulums and dowsing rods and EVP readers and things like that, where people can come get a hands-on experience to see if they can communicate with Earl or other spirits who are in the Brown Grand. But then you can always go deeper and longer hours. And some groups go from 8 to 2. Some of Tanya's tours are 75 minutes. And so it's just a real quick come in, hear the haunted history and see what you can find with this gear that we have. And so, yeah, it's been developing more and more, and groups reach out all the time about coming to see what they can investigate here at the theater.
Thank you. And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the Brown Grand Theater in Concordia, Kansas. For more information on the theater and paranormal investigations, visit their website at browngrand.org. If you would like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes without the commercials, you can become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts, and you can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. For all of us here at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes, and thank you for listening.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.